It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Mike Emanuel. President Joe Biden returns from foreign travel to the hard reality of inflation and a new reality on abortion. Americans facing high food and gasoline prices this holiday weekend as the president points the finger again.
Russia, Russia, Russia.
And blasts a ruling from the nation's high court while standing on the world stage.
And it is a mistake, in my view, for the Supreme Court to do what it did.
We'll ask National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator John Kirby about the plan to fight global inflation, the prospects for peace in Ukraine, and the president's comments on the court. Plus, tensions and confusion as states navigate the post-Roe v. Wade legal landscape. We'll discuss with Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi, one of several states with trigger laws now facing legal challenges. Plus, the abortion fight quickly becoming a key issue in midterm races, along with the president's low poll numbers. We'll ask our Sunday panel about Democrats' plans to shift strategy and whether they'll want Mr. Biden at their side on the trail.
I intend to do the campaigning myself.
And we'll discuss explosive new testimony from a key witness about former President Trump's actions on January 6th.
I just want to confirm that that is when you heard the president say the people with weapons weren't there to hurt him and that he wanted the Secret Service to remove the magnetometers.
That's correct.
All right now on Fox News Sunday. And hello again from Fox News in Washington, and happy Independence Day weekend. The president back on U.S. soil days after meeting with European allies to discuss ongoing support for Ukraine. The president hinting the steep gas prices we are seeing this holiday could be here to stay as Russia's war rages on. And he's promising action to preserve women's access to abortion as state bans go into effect. In a moment, National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator John Kirby joins me to discuss the administration's plans to increase the global oil supply. But first, let's turn to Alex Hoff live at the White House this morning with how President Biden is balancing foreign and domestic priorities. Alex?
Well, Mike, according to the president, they are one in the same, reiterating a stance that Russia is to blame for the current cost of living crisis and warning Americans not to grow weary.
President Biden did not arrive home with a remedy for gas prices, but left the G7 and NATO leadership meetings with a plan to cap the price of Russian oil exports and a fast-tracked invitation for Sweden and Finland to join the alliance Vladimir Putin sought to stifle.
He's getting exactly what he did not want. He wanted the Finlandization of NATO. He got the NATOization of Finland.
Additional military assistance was also pledged to allies in the continued fight to preserve Ukraine. Discussions also centered around potential security threats posed by China.
We rallied our alliances to meet both the direct threats of Russia poses to Europe and the systemic challenges that China poses to a rules-based world order.
The president also used the world stage to admonish the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade. From the White House Friday, President Biden met virtually with 9 Democratic governors who vowed to preserve access to abortions.
I share the public outrage at this extremist court that's committed to moving America backwards with fewer rights, less autonomy.
While the president said he supports a carve-out to the Senate filibuster in order to codify Roe v. Wade, he conceded that Democrats likely do not have enough votes right now to change Senate procedure. After the meeting, President Biden took off to Camp David, joining a pre-pandemic raid of Americans who traveled this holiday weekend. Those who did so by air faced thousands of delays and cancellations.
On the legislative side, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said this week that Republicans will not support a bipartisan innovation bill if Democrats continue to pursue a slimmed-down version of their social spending package. Mike?
Alex Hoff reporting from the White House. Alex, many thanks. Joining us now, National Security Council Strategic Communications Coordinator John Kirby. Admiral, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Good to be with you, Mike. Thanks.
Let's start in Ukraine, your former specialty being a former Pentagon spokesman. Is the goal to wear out the Russians or to defeat them?
The goal is to make sure that Ukraine can continue to defend itself and can defend its sovereignty and its territorial integrity. And you heard the president talk about this at NATO just a few days ago. We don't want to see Ukraine defeated by Russia. And that's why we are continuing to rush aid and assistance. Now, more than $7 billion worth of assistance. That's just from the United States alone to Ukraine.
There are concerns this war could drag on. Most expect that a negotiated settlement will be required to end it. Is it time for the president of the United States to push the Russians and the Ukrainians to the negotiating table?
It's time for the United States to continue to support Ukraine, and that's what we're doing. Mr. Zelensky, President Zelensky, he gets to determine how victory is decided and when and on what terms. And what we're going to do is continue to make sure that he can succeed on the battlefield so that he can succeed at the table. But even President Zelensky will tell you the time is not now for those discussions. And certainly President Putin has shown no indication that he's interested in negotiated talks. In fact, quite the contrary, he continues to not only lash out in the Donbass, but conducts airstrikes now in places like Kyiv.
Do you worry that the rules of engagement are too restrictive for the Ukrainians, and do you worry about a stalemate?
The Ukrainians are fighting really bravely and skillfully, Mike, and they're not only working to defend territory, and they have done a noble job of that. They're going on the counteroffensive. There were press reports this morning that they struck back in Melitopol. Melitopol, as you might recall, is a town they lost several weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They're striking back. So they have been willing to go on a counteroffensive. I can't speak to Ukrainian rules of engagement on the battlefield, but I can tell you that they are fighting bravely, skillfully, and quite creatively.
Okay, President Biden tweeted last night, "My message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product, and do it now." Jeff Bezos tweeted late last night, "Ouch. Inflation is far too important a problem for the White House to keep making statements like this. It's either straight ahead misdirection or a deep misunderstanding of basic market dynamics." How do you respond?
It's neither, not in terms of President Biden's view. I mean, the American people are facing pain at the pump. Clearly now we're at $5 a gallon, and the president is working very, very hard across many fronts, Mike, to try to bring that price down. At the G7, working on trying to develop a price cap on Russian oil, asking Congress to support a three-month holiday for the gas tax, and, of course, releasing now a million barrels of oil out of the strategic, a record number barrels of oil out of our strategic reserve to try to bring that price down. He knows that's not going to solve all the problems, but it'll help if everybody cooperates on this. We could bring the price down at least by about a dollar a gallon. So he's working very, very hard to do this because he knows the impact that high gas prices have on the American household.
Misdirection's a pretty serious allegation from a business mogul who happens to be the owner of the Washington Post.
I think anybody that knows President Biden knows he's plain spoken, and he tells you exactly what he's thinking and in terms that everybody can understand. So I think we obviously take great exception at the idea that this is somehow misdirection. The president is speaking honestly with the American people about what he's trying to do to bring the prices down. But he was honest even before the invasion, Mike, about the fact that it would not be cost-free, certainly not cost-free to President Putin, but it wouldn't be cost-free to the American people to stand up for democracy, just stand up for Ukraine's ability to defend itself.
He's expected to travel overseas to meet with leaders in the Middle East to talk about gasoline prices. There's been some criticism about potentially meeting with the Saudis because he's called them a pariah state. Let's play it.
I guess I will see the king and the crown prince, but that's not the meeting I'm going to. They'll be part of a much larger meeting. I'm not going to ask. I'm going to ask. There's all the Gulf states are meeting. I've indicated to them that I thought they should be increasing oil production generically, not to the Saudis particularly.
Does it matter if he discusses oil production with the Saudis individually or in a group meeting?
The president's going to the Gulf Cooperation Council. That's the purpose for this trip. The Saudi is the host of the GCC, and they have led the GC quite well. And the president's looking forward to a range of topics that we have to discuss. Energy is going to be on the agenda, of course, and you heard the president. He'll talk about energy security in the context of the GCC. He'll have a bilateral discussion with the king and the king's leadership team. But there's an awful lot on this agenda, Mike, that we can't forget. And clearly, energy is an important global issue right now. The president understands that, but so is terrorism. So is the war in Yemen. We're now on a second extension of a ceasefire in Yemen that the United States, you know, helped with our engagement, helped get us that through the Saudis. And then, of course, there's the issue of climate change. There's a lot going on in the GCC that the president's looking forward to discussing.
Let me follow up. Can you confirm no one-on-one meetings with the king or crown prince or even a pull-aside?
The president will have a bilateral discussion with King Salman and his leadership team. And, of course, the crown prince is on that leadership team. So, as you heard the president say, he certainly expects that he'll be seeing the crown prince in the context of that bilateral discussion.
Okay. Do you worry that countries in the Middle East may not be willing or may not be able to increase production to impact prices here at home?
Well, I don't want to get ahead of the agenda and what they're going to decide at the GCC meeting. I would just note, Mike, that OPEC has increased by 50% previously scheduled increases for July and August. So going into the rest of this summer, they've already increased again by half planned increases for oil production. And we'll see what happens, you know, as a result of this meeting and where things go. The president understands that, you know, increased oil production can help, which is another reason why, again, he's tapped into our strategic reserve, a million barrels a day. But there's an awful lot that goes into energy security that isn't just about oil production. And again, the president's looking forward to having that discussion.
The president spoke this week about inflation. Let's play it.
I can understand why the American people are frustrated because of inflation. But inflation is higher in almost every other country. Prices at the pump are higher in almost every other country. We're better positioned to deal with this than anyone, but we have a way to go.
But let's take a look at inflation numbers for major economies. There are many with inflation lower than the U.S. And as of May, average inflation in G7 countries is lower than it is in the U.S. Are we in a better position to deal with inflation?
The American economy is incredibly strong. I mean, we're still at 3.6 unemployment under President Biden's leadership now. In just the first year, 9 million more jobs were added. That is not an economy that's in a recession. And the president's right. We have the foundational elements here in the American economy to weather through this and to come through it strongly and good on the outside, on the other end of it.
The president also made headlines in Spain criticizing the Supreme Court. Let's play that.
The one thing that has been destabilizing is the outrageous behavior of the Supreme Court of the United States in overruling not only Roe v. Wade, but essentially challenging the right to privacy. We've been a leader in the world in terms of personal rights and privacy rights.
Is that appropriate on the world stage?
The president was answering an honest and fair question from a reporter, an American reporter, I might add, in that press conference. And so he said it, answered it in exactly the same way, same tone, same tenor, that he spoke about the decision, the Dobbs decision, when it was announced, when it came out. So he was very consistent with what he said before. But he was answering a question from a reporter, Mike. He was actually up there at NATO to talk about the accomplishments of the summit, which were significant. You know, the potential now accession of Sweden and Finland, which will change the alliance forever. The inclusion of global partnerships at the NATO alliance. The first time we had Australia, Japan, South Korea at a NATO summit. And then, of course, the continued support to Ukraine and a strategic concept, the first one in 12 years, mind you, that not only talks about the threat that Russia poses to European and transatlantic security, but also mentions China and the challenges posed by China first time. So there was a wide-ranging press conference. He answered a question honestly and fairly, and he used the same exact terms about his disappointment in the Supreme Court's decision as he did right here at home before he left.
Let's talk about basketball star Brittney Griner. She's on trial in Russia, could potentially face 10 years in Russian prison. Her wife has expressed some frustration.
Do you trust that the maximum amount of effort is being put forward to bring BG home?
No, I don't. And I hate to say that because I do trust that the persons working on this are very genuine people. That I do believe. But I don't think the maximum amount of effort is being done.
Any plans for the president to meet with her? And is a possible prisoner swap up for discussion?
I don't have anything on the president's schedule to speak to today. I can tell you that he is very much engaged in this, and he has been engaged with the team that is not only in direct communication with Ms. Greiner, but also working very, very hard to get her released. I mean, she needs to come home. It's past time. The United States government is very, very focused on her case, as it is on the cases of other unjustly and wrongfully detained Americans around the world. And this is something that the president takes very, very seriously.
Remain in Mexico policy. The Supreme Court says you guys can wind it down. I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of the Supreme Court or the policy. I know that's not your specialty, but broadly, are you concerned about the impact at the border, which is already facing very difficult times?
We believe that this Remain in Mexico policy was inhumane, and it actually forced people that were applying for asylum to then go back to deplorable conditions, unsafe conditions, and to face the potential for further violence, being pushed back into Mexico like that the way. So, look, we're working our way through the Supreme Court's decision. I won't get ahead of decisions here, but we welcome this decision, and we're going to be working hard here on what the next steps are going to be.
What about the humanitarian crisis at the border? Just this week, we saw more than 50 migrants killed in a tractor trailer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's deplorable. And I would, make a couple of points here. Number one, under President Biden's leadership now, we have really gone after human traffickers and smugglers. I mean, more than 2,400 arrests just to date since April, since we started this. And then look at the Summit of the Americas when the president was out in Los Angeles just a couple of weeks ago for the first time, getting more than 20 heads of state from the region to sign up to a migration declaration that for the first time, Mike, actually considers the root causes of a regional focus here. What's causing, for whether it's economically, politically, or socially, the root causes of causing this of these migrants to flow north into Mexico and put pressure on the Mexican government. So for the first time now, leaders across the region are going to take a holistic approach to try to get at those root causes to stop these migrants.
Last one. What about your new role at the White House? Some people see you as perhaps a co-White House press secretary. How do you respond?
No. Karine is the press secretary. I'm at the National Security Council, and I'm just trying to help with the coordination of some of the comms efforts. And it's a great honor and a privilege to be given this opportunity, and I'm very much excited about it.
Admiral John Kirby, thank you for your service. Thank you for your time this Independence Day weekend.
Thank you.
Up next, both sides of the debate are preparing for an onslaught of lawsuits over new restrictions on abortion in states across the U.S. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves joins us next on the legal challenge over his state's trigger law and on what the law means for women and doctors in his state.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
The president continues to blast the Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade. This week, he met with 9 Democratic governors to discuss next steps to preserve access. And the marshal of the Supreme Court asked officials in Maryland and Virginia to enforce their jurisdiction's laws against picketing outside a justice's home. This comes as pro-choice advocates are suing over new laws in multiple states. I sat down with Mississippi's Republican Governor Tate Reeves on this complicated legal landscape and the questions raised by his state's ban. Joining us now, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Well, thank you for having me on today, Mike.
Mississippi's Attorney General has initiated steps to certify the state's trigger law, and it could go into effect after 10 days. But you're facing a legal challenge from the state's only clinic. And that case cites a state Supreme Court ruling from 1998, which reads, "We find that the state constitutional right to privacy includes an implied right to choose whether or not to have an abortion. Question, is your trigger law going to survive this legal challenge? And if so, on what grounds?
Well, yes, we do believe that our trigger law is going to withstand this particular challenge. As you know, the court made their decision last Friday. On Monday of this past week, our Attorney General did her duty under the law, which is to certify that Roe v. Wade was, in fact, overturned. It takes 10 days for that trigger law then to go into effect. Mm-hmm. Jackson Women's Health Organization, which is the exact same organization that we were opposite in the Supreme Court case, then filed suit in state court. We are dealing with that. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court has appointed a special judge to hear that case because the four chancellors in Hinds County, which is the court of jurisdiction, recused themselves. And so we are expecting a hearing sometime early this week on that particular case. But yes, I do in expect for the state's law to be upheld in the state court, and I do expect our trigger law to go into effect.
Do you plan to enforce the ban even if this challenge is still making its way through the courts?
Well, obviously, we're gonna go through the court system in the manner in which we are required to do. Unless there is an injunction which forces us not to enforce it, then of course we're going to enforce the law as it currently exists.
Now that you're preparing for this post-Roe world, is there a plan to help women and the children they're now going to be delivering? In other words, does the pro-life movement have to shift its efforts now to moms and babies?
Well, absolutely, Mike. You're exactly right. And the fact of the matter is that this entire court battle was never about winning a court case. It was always about creating a culture of life. And that's exactly what we're doing here in Mississippi. And that's what we as pro-life Mississippians and pro-life Americans have to continue to do. We have to prove that being pro-life is not simply about being anti-abortion. And in our state, we are enacting policies to do exactly that.
The Republican Mississippi State Senator who sponsored this law also said he and other lawmakers will be seeking legislation to remove the exception for rape. Are you ready to sign a bill like that?
I don't believe that an exception for rape will actually make it through the Mississippi legislature and make it to my desk. Again, there's a lot of effort, particularly in Washington and other places, mainly by the Democrats, to try to talk only about the real small, minor number of exceptions that may exist. As you know, over 90% of all abortions that are done in America, some 63 million babies' lives aborted since Roe was wrongly decided in 1973, over 90% of those are elective abortions. If the far left really believe what they want you to believe, if they really believe that the American people were with them and were for abortion on demand, then they wouldn't be talking about all of these exceptions and minor numbers. They'd be talking about abortion itself.
When Roe was overturned, the American Medical Association released a statement calling the decision an egregious allowance of government intrusion into the medical examination room. Are you concerned Mississippi is intruding on medical decisions women make with their doctors?
Well, the Roe decision was made by the United States Supreme Court based upon what our United States Constitution says. They've had several opinions over the last couple of weeks, and the left has gone crazy on virtually every one of them. And the only problem that the left has is that they just forget this one small document called the United States Constitution. And that is exactly what the court has upheld, primarily on 6-3 votes over the last couple of weeks. And the reality is, if you read the Constitution, there is no guaranteed right to an abortion in the U.S. Constitution. And therefore, I think the court has gotten this one and the other cases that they ruled upon exactly right.
Is there potential for confusion around the exception to save the life of the mother? Researchers in Texas spoke with clinicians who have been navigating new abortion restrictions there in the last year. They quoted one as saying, quote, people have to be on death's door to qualify for maternal exemptions. Are you concerned confusion could impact pregnant women's health?
Well, there's always the potential for confusion, but when you think about the exception for the life of the mother, in essence, you have a true medical decision that has to be made by the physician, because you have two lives at stake. You have the life at stake that is the unborn baby in the mother's womb, and potentially the life at stake of the mother. And so that is a decision that should not be made, in my opinion, by politicians, but that's a decision that should be made by doctors and physicians and trying to determine what is the best way to safely protect both lives, hopefully, but certainly a decision has to be made at a moment's notice, and that's only for a physician to make.
Let's talk about the differences between states now that Roe is no longer in effect. What does enforcement look like in your state? Can a woman from Mississippi simply travel to a different state and have a procedure, or would you try to stop her?
Well, in our state, the enforcement is done by the State Board of Medical Licensure. We have a State Board of Medical Licensure, which actually oversees the practice of medicine in our state. And they ensure that any physician that is practicing, whether it's through telemedicine or otherwise, that any physician that practices in our state is practicing not only based upon the standards of care that we require in our state, but also based upon state law. And so if a physician is attempting to practice medicine in the state of Mississippi and they're violating our law, then our State Board of Medical Licensure will pull their license from them.
Should doctors in other states be concerned about prosecution?
Well, certainly I think that doctors in other states should be concerned about all kinds of things, but I'm hopeful that in creating a culture of life in our state by investing in pregnancy resource centers, the things that we are doing now to give the resources to mothers and babies that they need, which I think is incredibly important, that we're going to convince those moms that yes, those lives are precious, and there are people in this world and there are people in the state of Mississippi who love not only the moms but also the babies, and we're looking to do everything we can to help create a forever home for every single baby in Mississippi, and we believe we'll save lives by doing so.
What's to stop abortion medication from being sent into Mississippi via the mail?
Well, what's going to stop that, obviously, is the Board of Medical Licensure, because if a physician is practicing medicine in the state of Mississippi, they have to have a license to do so. And if abortion is illegal in our state, which it is, then those medicines will not be allowed, and they will not have a license to practice in our state.
Should women in Mississippi be concerned about surveillance of their mail or their phones?
I have no reason to believe that there would be any surveillance of mail or phones. But I do think that if physicians are practicing medicine in our state without a license, then those physicians should be very concerned about doing so.
A political question, sir. You've supported President Trump in 2024. He's talking about potentially running again. Would you support him in 2024, or is there something that you have heard in the January 6th special committee that may give you pause or may make you want somebody who can carry out his policies but with a fresh voice?
Well, like most Americans, I haven't spent very much time paying any attention to the January 6th hearings. I did have the occasion of spending some time with President Trump just in the last couple of weeks. He was in Mississippi. I was pleased to welcome him to our state. There's no doubt in my mind that were it not for his conservative justices, and by the way, the campaign in 2016 was largely run on who had the ability to appoint Supreme Court justices, and so therefore, I believe that President Trump's legacy is going to be creating a Supreme Court that focuses on the Constitution. Now, he's going to have to decide whether or not he's going to run for president. That's a decision that only he can make, and then we'll decide at that point, but he certainly did a fantastic job as president. And the fact of the matter is, when you talk to Americans and people like in small towns across Mississippi, the things like inflation are what people are worried about. They're not worried about this trial that's being had by only one side in Washington, D.C. They're focused on the issues that matter to them and their pocketbooks. And Joe Biden's inflation is really hurting everyday Mississippians.
Governor, thank you for talking with us. Always good to see you, sir.
Mike, thanks for having me on.
Up next, we'll bring in our Sunday group on stunning comments from a former Trump White House staffer this week about what happened on January 6th and what to expect as the committee investigating the riot drops a new subpoena. We heard stunning allegations this week about the actions of former President Trump and his senior staff both before and during the Capitol riot on January 6th. Former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson testified under oath that the president wanted to join his supporters at the Capitol. Now there's some pushback about certain claims she made. David Spunt reports on the revelations, the fallout, and what happens now.
The truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
As millions watched this week, a former White House aide, Cassidy Hutchinson, described a president desperate to hang on to power on January 6, 2021. Hutchinson told lawmakers then-President Donald Trump knew some in the crowd were armed.
I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here.
According to Hutchinson, a top Secret Service official at the White House, Tony Ornato, told her Trump demanded to go to the Capitol after his speech. And Hutchinson said she was told the president lashed out when he was told no.
Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Ornato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
The former president continues to deny the story, attacking Hutchinson's credibility in multiple social media posts. Ornato was not in the vehicle, meaning Hutchinson's story is secondhand, which she does not refute. A Secret Service spokesman told Fox News the committee did not reach out to the agency in the days leading up to Hutchinson's testimony, but lawmakers on the committee are defending her credibility.
Her testimony represented the cumulative information that the committee had received, but we were simply of the mind that the public needed to know about all of this.
Hutchinson's attorney says she stands by her testimony. The committee is in discussions with the Secret Service to allow Ornato and Engel to testify. The committee also subpoenaed former White House counsel Pat Cipollone, though it's not clear if he'll play ball. Mike.
David Spunt reporting from Washington. David, many thanks. And it's time now for our Sunday group. Howie Kurtz, host of Media Buzz, Fox News political analyst Juan Williams, Washington Post columnist Mark Thiessen, and Molly Hemingway, the editor-in-chief of The Federalist. Welcome, all of you. Happy Independence Day weekend.
Yeah.
All right, Howie. So the Select Committee has subpoenaed Pat Cipollone, former White House counsel. What are your thoughts on what we heard this week from the White House aide, the former White House aide, Ms. Hutchinson, and what's the impact?
Well, Cassidy Hutchinson testified under oath about what she'd been told, and some of her ex-colleagues, I think, should also come in and testify under oath if they want to challenge that. It could undermine her rather than us relying on spokesmen and leaks. But look, here's how we know her testimony broke through. Donald Trump is calling her a wacko and a leaker and a liar. Secondly, some conservative commentators who have been dismissing the whole committee as a clown show, attacking her credibility and defending the former president. But there's a split on the right. Mick Mulvaney, Trump's guy, former acting White House chief of staff, saying he believes Hutchinson. But finally, new reporting now about whether or not, well, we know based on this reporting, that Trump groups paid for her previous lawyer, which is interesting, but also that she says she got a phone call from an intermediary from her former boss, Mark Meadows, saying Donald Trump is thinking about you. He knows you'll be loyal. That has raised questions that could boomerang about whether or not witnesses were being tampered with.
Okay, Molly, here's how the Wall Street Journal editorial board responded to this week's hearing. Quote, the committee is steeped in partisanship, but that doesn't mean Republicans should look away from the considerable evidence it is producing about Mr. Trump's behavior. That would surely be relevant to voters if he runs in 2024. Is this moving the needle with GOP voters?
It seems to be moving the needle in exactly the opposite way than Democrats had hoped for. Polls are coming out showing that Donald Trump's popularity is increasing, that his when he's up against Joe Biden, his numbers are even better than they were before. And that's not surprising. I mean, this is not a legitimate committee. This is the first time in the history of Congress that you've only had members appointed by one party. That's because Nancy Pelosi kicked off the top Republicans on the committee, and the only people on that committee are appointed by her. Mm-hmm. So they're serving her purposes. And so you're not getting a balance of information. There were plenty of people who testified who contradict what this aide had said. Their testimony is not being shown or released in any way. You're not having cross-examination. And I think Americans generally don't like to see things like star chambers. It feels very Stalinist, and that's what the Democrats are doing, and so it's not working out very well for them.
All right, Juan, let's get you into the mix on January 6th.
Well, it seems to me pretty overwhelming, the evidence. This evidence is coming from Republicans, Mike. These are Republicans who are testifying under oath. In the case of Ms. Hutchinson, she was a loyal Trump worker and very much a person who was, you know, not only hired by Mr. Meadows, but, you know, a friend of Mr. Meadows. And so she is simply telling you what took place. And with regard to the January 6th panel, let's not forget, I think President Trump now has indicated he is disappointed that Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, did not choose to participate. And it was Kevin McCarthy's choice once Nancy Pelosi said no to two very provocative, high-energy type Trumpians. It was. She had a choice. And then he had a choice to say, let me put other people on the panel. He instead withdrew. That was his choice.
The fact that you had Cassidy Hutchison giving very compelling testimony and very important testimony, but there was no cross-examination of her from somebody with a different point of view. Most Americans look at that and say that's unfair and that's illegitimate. And so that's the problem they have. It's not the speaker's job to choose who the Republicans are going to be on a committee. The other problem that they have is this is all captivating to all of us in the Washington bubble. Mm-hmm. Out in the American heartland, what the Democrats are sending a message to the American people, this is the most important issue facing the country. And a lot of Americans who are having to choose between gas and food are saying that's not the most important issue to me. What's important? Where are the hearings on the worst inflation in 40 years, the highest gas prices on record, the worst border crisis in American history, the worst crime wave since the 1990s, all the things I'm experiencing every day? So the New York Times and my newspaper, The Washington Post, love this because this is feeding their echo chamber. But out in the heartland, this is not what most people are voting on and what care about.
But Mark, I think that comes across to me as attempting to distract people from the idea that there was a group of people led by the President of the United States who tried to undermine the United States government, led an insurrection. Nobody is rebutting her testimony he knew there were people with weapons
hearings,
and he wanted to go up to the Capitol and lead those people to stop the certification of an election.
I don't disagree with you on that. What I'm saying is we had bipartisan hearings and a bipartisan report in the Senate. We had an impeachment trial on this, and now we're having this, and the effort is obviously political. It's to try to retoxify Trump into the elections because they're afraid that he's going to run again.
I think Senator McConnell stopped any investigation.
There's a backlash against Democrats because it says to the American people, you're not focused on what I care about.
Molly, you had a comment?
Well, people were actually very concerned about political violence throughout 2020 when their cities were being burned down, when the White House was attacked, when federal courthouses were being attacked for months at a time, when police precincts were burned to the ground. And nobody cared. Nobody did investigations when the American people were being harmed. And you have one thing that has been condemned by people across the political spectrum, and it has become the only thing Washington, D.C. cares about, which really emphasizes for the American people that Washington, D.C. doesn't care about them. They just care about themselves.
Okay. So to the Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade this week, we again see calls for Democrats to end the filibuster in the United States Senate, Howie, but they don't have the votes.
Well, it's obvious they don't have the votes, and yet President Biden went on television and said, I am calling to suspend the filibuster. First time he's ever done that. And then, you know, the press had to say, sorry, Mr. President, you don't have the votes because Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are not in favor of even a one-time suspension for the filibuster. So it makes him look weak and ineffective to do that. Beyond that, you know, there's a lot of growing complaints from Democrats about how Biden needs to take bold action and just stop making speeches about this. And yet he hasn't. And this, I think, is hurting him. It's reviving talk. I know we'll talk the next segment about the midterms. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you have all these state-by-state battles, you talk to the governor of Mississippi about this. You have some Democratic prosecutors saying they're not going to enforce the law in their red states. I don't see how they can possibly get away with that. You have some pro-life groups saying, you know, we're going to go try to have legislation for citizens to sue anybody who tries to go to a state where it's legal.
Right.
And finally, you have Mike Pence saying, let's have a nationwide ban. But you have Kevin McCarthy, let's say, have a ban after 15 weeks. Some Republicans are nervous about the impact of a total ban.
Molly, the pro-life movement has been going after or wanting to go after Roe v. Wade for decades. Now it's actually here in terms of getting the Supreme Court to overturn that ruling. What's the impact for pro-life women of every age?
Well, it affects everybody in a beautiful way. The pro-life movement has worked for 50 years to get rid of this really poorly decided assertion from the Supreme Court. And it has shown the success of the conservative judicial movement, of churches, of people working for so long. But I want to also point out, this is what it has done is just allowed people to debate this at the state level. And you look at what's happening internationally, something like protecting unborn human life after 15 weeks is very standard internationally. That's what this Dobbs decision allows states to do. It allows us to be more like the rest of the world in how we protect unborn human life, at least at some point. And I would say that Democrats actually have a very radical position to defend. Their position is no restriction on abortion for any reason at any time in pregnancy. If you want to end a human life because your child is a girl, they think that should be legal. That is a very difficult political decision to defend now that it's being returned to the states and people can have a more moderate viewpoint.
Juan, the president talked about changing the filibuster, doesn't appear to have the votes. Is he too reactive to the most progressive voices in the Democratic Party?
No, I think he's reactive to the fact that if you just want to talk politics and not morals, I think that, you know, more than 60% of the American people think Roe should have been left in place. And it was in place under various political alignments on that court for almost 50 years. So now it's a question of, wait a second, how do we simply reestablish what was a norm for the American people and for American women so that their daughters don't have less rights than their mothers and their grandmothers. I will say that with regard to the Senate and trying to get a waiver in terms of the filibuster, Sinema and Manchin both say, well, if we do that, what if the Republicans gain the majority? Then they could, in fact, put in place a total ban on abortion. But I think they're miscalculating. I think Mitch McConnell will do that anyway. And now the dynamic has shifted in terms of what Molly was just talking about. The energy was on the people who were opposed to abortion, working against abortion rights for more than 50 years. Now the energy is taking Democrats and suburban women who want abortion rights to the polls come November.
McConnell didn't do it when Donald Trump was president. What makes you say that he would do it under a Republican president?
Garland.
No, but he didn't do it. Donald Trump asked him to get rid of the filibuster. McConnell didn't do it because he said we might be in the minority one day. This is the problem. The Democrats are going to lose the one house of Congress. We're going to talk about the midterms in a minute. But in 2024, they're defending five times as many seats as Republicans are. So even if we don't take back the Senate, Republicans don't take back the Senate this year, they're going to probably take it back in 2024, then you could have a Republican president, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate, and you don't want a filibuster-free Senate, Juan.
All right. Gentlemen, we have to leave it there. These guys are getting into it pretty well. Thanks, panel. We'll take a break here. Up next, how reaction to the Supreme Court, the president's poll numbers, and Democrats' enthusiasm are shaping critical midterm races.
Have you talked to President Biden about re-election?
Joe Biden is running for re-election, and I will be his ticket mate.
Full stop.
Full stop.
Vice President Kamala Harris confirming again that she intends to join President Biden on the 2024 ticket. And we're back now with the panel. So, Howie, there's a pretty lengthy New York Times piece this week about will he or won't he run? It seems to frustrate President Biden a great deal. Is there anything he can do to tamp down these stories?
Probably not. I mean, he does want to run, and even if he had private doubts, he wouldn't acknowledge that because then you become a lame duck. But there is a growing calls from Democrats. This is not the opposition party saying he maybe shouldn't run. And this ties into the abortion decision, I think, because by the left wing of his party, the president is seen as ineffective, not just on abortion rights, but he always seems to be playing catch up, whether it's baby formula or at the border, hasn't been able to deliver on voting rights or police reform, all of these issues. And so it's a hard position for Joe Biden. You would think he would at least have the support of his own party, but, you know, the age question and the fitness question are now being openly debated, in part thanks to these media reports.
Mark, we showed the soundbite from the vice president. Yeah. Then there was a statement kind of clarifying. Is that for campaign finance reasons, or is that to give the president a little wiggle room? How do you see it?
And generally speaking, the president of the United States announces his reelection, not the vice president doing it for him. So that was a little bit of a slip up. But look, you know, Biden, you pointed out that New York Times story that Biden is irked that people are questioning this. What does he expect? He is the least popular president in the history of presidential polling, going back to Harry Truman. No president has been this unpopular at 500 days in the presidency, from Truman to Trump, than him. And that 17% of Americans say they're better off now than they were 4 years ago. 64% of Americans say they don't want him to run for re-election. He's delivered, as I said, the worst inflation in 40 years, highest gas prices, worst crime wave since the 1990s, worst border crisis in American history, baby formula shortage. This summer, we're going to have blackouts because of the war on fossil fuel. The Washington Post reported that the Midwest, which has had stable electricity for decades, is going to have blackouts because they've pushed the coal industry out of business and there's no renewables to replace it. What kind of a record is that to run on? So of course people are talking about it, and you know, you want people to stop talking about it. Change your policies.
I see Juan getting ready.
I listen, and I think Chicken Little's in the room. I mean, the sky is falling. Run from America. I love America. Let me just say the 4th of July weekend. I'm glad to be here, and I think I'm really glad that we had a president who was able to deal with a, you know, once in a lifetime pandemic. I think that's great that we are where we are right now, that we can have 4th of July celebrations. Let me just say, we kept a lot of people from going under financially, especially working class Americans, thanks to COVID relief programs. Secondly, we're stopping Russia from running over Ukraine, which is a clear signal to the Chinese, who are our enemies. And I think, again, it's important. We just heard earlier Mike Rand Biden saying, this is a long-term effort. This is not something you can just quit on. And don't forget, when you have an extreme Supreme Court, when you have these things going on, the American people are discontent. A lot of people say the country's going in the wrong direction. But people understand that Biden's working at it. He may not have success, how he said it. You know, a lot of people on the Democratic side are frustrated that he's not more aggressive. But this is not just a referendum about him. It's a referendum about a president who was trying to overthrow the U.S. government, and Democrats were
wrong, and you're right.
No,
let's get this side of the table involved. How about a midterm question for Molly? Abigail Spanberger of Virginia has said that it may be time for new leadership in the Democratic Party. She says President Biden will not be campaigning with her this fall. Do you expect other Democrats in tough races to follow suit?
Well, with how toxic Joe Biden is, it will be unsurprising to see a lot of people hoping that he does not help with their campaign. But I think that Democrats and actually the entire political establishment are misdiagnosing the level of problems here. It is true that Biden is very unpopular, but what's more true is that the entire Democrat policy agenda is unpopular. This is something where the ideas he has are not contested in the House or the Senate. He almost has nobody disagreeing with him. The energy policy he's put forth, his foreign policy that he's put forth, these are things that the entire Democratic Party has supported, and they're very unpopular. So people knew when they voted for Biden last time that there were rumors of his cognitive decline at that point. The fact that he's doing poorly now is not that surprising. But if the people who were running things actually were more competent and more moderate, you wouldn't be seeing this chatter.
Howie, how are both sides framing the stakes for these midterms right now?
Well, you know, President Biden's strongest issue, I think, is his leadership of the Western alliance on Ukraine. Unfortunately for him, that is not a big voting issue. His foreign policy was at 1% in a recent Fox poll. On inflation, if people really do care about, you know, we've gone through several iterations of it's transitory, it's going to get better, are we heading for a recession? So, you know, the Democratic president is trying to say, times are tough. Part of it is the war. The Republicans, we heard some of this from Mark, are saying there are all of these problems. People think the country's heading in the wrong direction. And there's a sense that things are out of control. And I think that hurts an incumbent.
And there's a lot of people saying, Democrats, independents, and Republicans saying we're heading in the wrong direction. That has to be alarming for not only the White House, but these Democratic campaign committees.
And that's before we've even gotten quarter two economic data, which the Atlanta Fed just said that they're predicting that the second quarter will be 2.1% decrease in GDP. Two quarters of negative growth are what most people define a recession as. So having a recession while doing midterms is going to be very difficult for Democrats.
But I wouldn't talk down the country like that or talk us into a recession.
I'm talking down.
I just wouldn't do it.
I'm talking down the policies. The American people are great. And in fact, they are very frustrated with what's happening in D.C. They are frustrated by these gas prices.
Well, the gas price, well, they're frustrated with war with Russia.
And they know
how about that?
That have led them.
We've got to run. But thank you for the fireworks on this 4th of July weekend. See you next Sunday. Up next, a final word on the week ahead.
When you can't watch, listen. Get the latest news, business, and news headlines on SiriusXM. Anytime, anywhere. Fox News Audio on SiriusXM. America is listening.
And that's it for today. I'm Mike Emanuel. Have a wonderful 4th of July holiday and a great week. And we'll see you next Fox News Sunday.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to Fox News Sunday ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.